So we are in a season we call Love Gives. What is that? Every week we have a project that is not about us. It's about our community. Maybe it's about people we know or people that we don't know. But in this holiday season, we just want to show God's love in practical ways. We call that compassion. And Pastor Jimmy, who is our master of ceremonies for all those events there, what is coming up this week?
Wow, we are excited this week to kick off an event for the refugees. Can you imagine just leaving everything behind and showing up in a country having nothing? So I called the center in Salt Lake, and they're like, I go, what's your biggest need? They're like, it's really, really simple. We need socks, gloves, hoodies, coats, sweatpants. They're like, they're just cold. They're just cold, and they just need some clothing. And so they said also, they go, you know, we're not trying to be picky, but can they be new? We don't know if they can be new, just to give them dignity. And I said, I think we can take care of that. Don't even worry about that. So this week, if you have an opportunity, or in the weeks to come, next couple of weeks, if you can pick this up, you can drop it off any Sunday here, these things, it's going to be a great thing, and then we're going to go deliver it all. I mean, it's going to be a beautiful thing for them.
And last week, we had boxes that were filling for some workers who I don't think get a lot of recognition a lot of times. And what happened with all our boxes, Jimmy?
We ran out.
so that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, that's a really, really good thing. So you'll notice the boxes in there today are like U-Haul boxes, Home Depot. Now, we're going to transfer them. We're not moving Roy or anything like that, okay, just so we're clear. But pick up your U-Haul box, your Home Depot box, because these are people who are staff and employees of like DCFS, Children's Justice House, who see a very dark place in our world. And so we want to show these employees that we love them, we care about them, and give them something great. And so, yeah, and then we got some figures to talk about, too.
Yeah, there is a cost that comes along with Love Gives, and we wanted to show you what that was and where it goes. So Feed My Starving Children, we pay for the supplies and the shipping for all the meals that we pack and send to some of the neediest kids in the world. And then Refugee Hospitality, we're going to support a refugee family for a pretty good amount of time there. And then also we're buying bulletproof vests for Layton City Police Department and the Morgan Police Department as well.
Awesome.
Everything that is earmarked for Love Gives goes 100% there. And what are we doing if we go over, Pastor Jimmy?
Boy, we've gone over every year. And if we go over this year, we're just going to continue to give it to the Refugee Hospitality, keep them funded and keep them going. So you guys are incredible. Thank you. This is the most exciting time of the year for me. Thank you for your generosity. Seriously, thank you so much.
So let's turn our attention to the message for today. And in these weeks, we're trying to unpack, reveal the heart that is behind Love Gives. What is the motivation? What is the passion? What is the reason for us to do this on a regular basis? And today, we're going to talk and really be challenged, I hope, to be the one. We'll get there in a minute. Y'all ready for Thanksgiving? It's coming up this Thursday, right? And I want to start with a Thanksgiving quiz, all right? So I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to give you some different options here, and you feel free to shout out the answers here. How many calories on average are consumed on Thanksgiving? Here are your choices. 35, 3,700, 41, 48,000. Shout it out. The answer is 4,100. I think the normal amount is about 2,200, so that says a lot right there that we're almost doubling that. How many are honest enough to say, I'm going to go for 48,000? I'm just going to keep eating pie on Thursday. What popular Christmas song was actually written for Thanksgiving? Jingle Bells, Deck the Halls, Little Drumstick Boy, or Home for the Holidays? Shout it out. It's Jingle Bells was actually written for Thanksgiving and has become a Christmas song. Black Friday is the busiest day for what profession? Is it personal trainers, cleaners, dietitians, or plumbers? Yeah, you got this. It's plumbers. I don't even want to know what that's all about. What was the first department store to do a Thanksgiving Day parade? Wait till I put up the options, okay? Wow. Macy's, Sears, Gimbel's, or Penny? Shout it out. And the answer, of course, is Gimbel's. So you're all wrong. all think you know so much out there. What makes Thanksgiving so great? Here are the options: football, food, family, or fun. I would say all of the above as well. It's a bit of a trick question. Those are all good, but you know what it is? It's actually giving thanks. And not just feeling thankful, but revealing thankful. And we mentioned this last week, and I'm going to point it out again today, that there are things that are being discovered in our day, scientifically, research-based. And what it does is demonstrate what Jesus said 2,000 years ago. Check this out, and I read about this research project here. Proves that the greatest contributor to happiness is how much gratitude you not feel, but how much you show. And here's how they did it. They brought some people in, and they gave them a happiness test. And then they asked them, you know, to take a paper and pen and write down the names of people that they were grateful for and why they were grateful to that person. And then after they got done writing, they gave them a phone and said, now call that person and read what you wrote on that piece of paper. And then they gave the people the happiness test after they did that. And it soared and was so much higher than when they took it the first time. We talk a lot about having an attitude of gratitude. That's great. I would say, and based on the story we're going to look at here in a minute, gratitude includes that, but it's more than an attitude. That we don't just feel gratitude, that we would reveal gratitude. So we're going to jump into a story. It's found in the Gospel of Luke. And if you're new to church and the Bible and faith, let me just tell you this about, you know, the four Gospels, right? There are four accounts of the life and times of Jesus. Four Gospels: Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Each is unique in its own way. Here's what makes Luke unique. He is the only writer of the, you know, eyewitness accounts of Jesus' life who's from a non-Jewish background. So he's writing from a Gentile background, and he was a physician. He was a doctor. And, you know, you probably know this already with your doctors. Doctors are not, you know, prone to saying, you know, I heard these rumors, so I'm just going to kind of treat you going with this. Or I heard some people tell some stories about that. If your doctor ever tries to treat you based on just some rumors, get a new doctor, okay? Because ordinarily what they do is they base it on things that have been observed and have been seen. Well, Luke, the physician, starts out his gospel account and he says, you know, in essence, I have an agenda. He's writing to a guy named Theophilus. That's a Greek name. We don't know much about him. And he says, I am writing after investigating all these different accounts of Jesus, and I want to present it to you in an orderly manner. Why? So that you might have certainty about the things that you have been taught. And so he says, yeah, I have an agenda in putting together this account of Jesus. And the stories that I choose are going to be chosen on purpose and for a reason. So let's jump into one of those stories found in Luke chapter 17. On the way to Jerusalem, keep that in mind, we're going to come back to that. He, Jesus, was passing along between Samaria and Galilee. And for us, that might not mean a lot, or maybe you've heard about that and you know that there was a little bit of animosity between the Samaritans and the Jewish people. They hated each other, and there was a religious divide, there was a racial divide, and there was also a political divide. In fact, research has shown most of the Facebook posts from 2,000 years ago in that arena were around politics, trying to jab one another because they thought they were having an impact, but they didn't. Okay, I made that up. But the race part, the religion part, and the political part was very real. And when you look at a map of that whole area, most of Jesus' life and ministry was taking place up here in the north in part of Galilee. And now he's got to go down to Jerusalem. That's down here in Judah on the bottom left. And what's that region right in between is Samaria. Now here's the thing. Back in those days, you could come around this way and you wouldn't even have to go near those people. But what does Jesus do? He's right on the border. He's coming right down the middle of where there is all this strife and animosity. As he entered a village, he was met by 10 lepers who stood at a distance. Now, we don't know much about lepers in our day. That condition still exists. In fact, look this up, and about 180,000 people in the world right now have leprosy. What's amazing about that number, that may sound really big, is that it used to be much bigger. But we've discovered that this bacterial infection, which would lead to leprosy, is something that can be treated and even cured with a series of antibiotics. Well, they didn't have that 2,000 years ago. They do today. What did leprosy do? It began as a skin disease, and you would break out in splotches, and then it would even deform the skin to some degree, and eventually it would attack your nerves so that you would not feel anything. You would become numb in many respects. And so people would, you know, stub their toe or maybe get a cut, and they wouldn't feel any pain. And so they wouldn't treat it, or they didn't even know that there was a serious issue there. We don't often think about this. Pain can be a gift, because if we don't feel pain, we don't know that we have a need, or that something's hurt, or that something is broken. And so a lot of times lepers, you know, will lose, you know, a toe or a finger or different parts of their body because they just couldn't even care for it. And so as you can imagine, in the ancient world, there was this idea that, oh, we can't let that be near us. It was a contagious disease, not highly contagious, but somewhat contagious. And so these people were marginalized. They were excluded from the community. They couldn't live in town. They certainly couldn't live in their own home. They were separated from their family. They couldn't go to the temple. They couldn't worship God the way that everybody else did. And here's the kicker, spiritually speaking, that people looked at them and they said, you are being punished by God. And you must have done something for the condition that you were in. Let me show you what leprosy can look like. It was something that was very obvious, very visible. And maybe you've heard the term leper colony. And there are some of those that still exist in the world today. And the reason for that is we got to get that away from us. So Jesus, on his way to Jerusalem, comes into a town. 10 lepers are standing there, and what happens? They lifted up their voices, and the phrase behind that is from where we get the word megaphone, right? So they shout out in a loud voice, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. Have loving sympathy on us. And apparently they've heard some things about him. And you know, Jesus has healed many people before this day. And when you see him healing people, here's sort of a common feature in those healings. He didn't do it exactly the same every time, but often what he did is he was up close. He would touch people and he would heal them. And it were blind people, he would touch their eyes and they would be healed. But not on this day. It's almost as if he's walking by, they shout out, and now he's going to return and sort of speak out in a loud voice. It doesn't tell us that he goes over to them, but when he saw them, he said to them, go and show yourself to the priests. And if you think, what an odd response to their request, you would not be alone. What's going on there? And they must have known what often is difficult for us to understand. Back in the Old Testament, in Leviticus chapter 14, it gives protocol for how to deal with all kinds of different skin diseases, leprosy being one of them. And if you felt that you had been healed of whatever skin disease you had, the protocol was to go and show yourself to the priest, and he would examine and kind of see you over the span of a week. And if you were good after a week, he would pronounce you to be healed, and you could go back to your family, you could go back to the temple, and all the other things that came with it. And so what is Jesus telling them? Hey guys, you know what? Start walking. And by the time you get to the priest, and he's talking about in Jerusalem at the temple, which was about a day or two journey away, by the time you get there, you're going to have a reason for the priest to look you over and say, you're good to go. And what happens? They aren't immediately healed, but it says, as they went, they were cleansed, all 10 of them. Can you imagine how that unfolded? You know, here they are, the 10 guys, okay, we're going to take Jesus at his word and start walking. And then all of a sudden, you know, I feel something in my feet. I haven't had any feeling in my feet for a long time. You know what? I can feel my fingers again. And your face, it looks normal. And it looks like we don't have any leprosy anymore. And can you imagine what they do in that moment? I'm thinking they're high-fiving each other and they start to run. Let's get down there as quick as we can. How long have you been away from your family? I've been away for this long. What's the first thing that you're going to do when you get back? No doubt, all 10 guys who have been healed are incredibly grateful for what's happening to them. But then something unusual happens. then one of them, and do you notice, one of them, one, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. They're all grateful. They all begin to take off. One of them stops, turns around, and goes in the other direction. He cries out with a loud voice. He fell on his face at Jesus' feet, giving him thanks. Now, he was a Samaritan. One of those people, one of the bad guys. Jesus doesn't care about those categories that we often create in this world. Every single life matters to him. And then Jesus asks these questions, and it's really hard for us to put a tone of voice behind a lot of the quotes that we read in the Bible. You know, how was it said? But I have to think that there was a measure of sadness in these first two questions. We're not 10 cleansed. Where are the nine? Where are the nine? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner? He's the least likely guy to do what he does, but he does it. And he said to him, Jesus said to him, rise and go your way. Your faith has made you well. That story is about a lot of things. And I think at the most basic level, I think it, you know, teaches us that almost everyone feels gratitude. I mean, if we stop and we think about it, there are so many reasons that we can feel, have an attitude of gratitude, to feel gratitude. But I also think this is true. Not as many express gratitude. That we don't act on it, or maybe we don't say it, because we may incorrectly think that gratitude is simply an emotion. And it certainly includes that. But it can be more than that. So what can we learn from this one who turned around? When he saw that he was healed, he turned back, praising God with a loud voice. So he saw this gift that had just been dropped into his life, right? This healing. His life was going to be forever changed. He could go back home. He could worship God like everybody else. He would not have to be marginalized, ostracized. My life is back. And I wonder, for us, how many times we fail to see the many reasons for gratitude. Now we think, wow, that was a remarkable thing for something so extreme to be taken away. Could it be that many of the gifts that have been given to us are things that populate our lives on a daily basis, and maybe we don't see them for what they are any longer? Gifts. And so maybe there's some gratitude missing because we miss the gifts that are there in front of us all the time. Several years ago now, a church on the East Coast put together a video to try to frame up this idea that there are gifts around us all the time. Do we see them for what they are? And this was done in preparation for Christmas, but I think it applies to the story we're looking at today. And I wonder if maybe this can help us to see the gifts that are around us all the time that we may sometimes take for granted. Check this out.
I'm alive! I'm alive!
Yeah?
Yeah. Hey, Christine! You're here too! I love you!
I know.
Dad, what's happening?
Honey, the power works! It's coming, it goes on and off, whatever we want! We've got clean water!
Oh, that's great, look at that!
Ooh! I bet I know what this does!
Rain down the glorious water!
Ah, shoes. Oh, what do we got here, guys? Food!
I love food. What? A booth? You gonna have work? This is awesome.
Come on,
listen here.
Dee, the what?
Josh, be careful.
I have a car. Did you guys see this?
Yeah, you have a car.
A car!
And Don't forget your coffee.
You're the best.
I think the main takeaway from that video is coffee is a gift. Use it, okay? Right, so he saw the gift that had been dropped into his lap. What else did he do? He turned back, praising God with a loud voice. What did he do? He put off the task for a time. Was there a moment that he went and showed himself to the priest? You better believe there was. Because that was really the route for him to return home. But first, he puts that on pause. And he goes back and he does something else. Sometimes we need to stop what we're doing just for a time so that we can do something that might even be more significant in that moment. And it also says when he goes and finds Jesus, he's praising God, giving him thanks. So there's action, there's words, he feels gratitude, no doubt, and he reveals gratitude. What does this tell us? Say my thanks to the person. Everybody feels gratitude. Will I reveal it? See, and here's the thing about that story, right? All 10 of those lepers felt grateful. One turns around and expresses his gratitude. Have you ever had the opportunity to truly say thank you to somebody who impacted your life? I haven't had many of them, and I'll be honest with you, what we're talking about doesn't come supernatural to me. Maybe it does for you. I'm happy for you. But for me, I think it's a little more difficult. But I got to tell you, one time, I grew up on the East Coast, and when I went to elementary school, we had a gym teacher who was brand new hire. He was young and cool, and everybody thought, this guy is awesome. And his name was Mr. Slack, our gym teacher. And everybody knew this, all the kids knew this, that if it was raining outside one day and you couldn't go out for recess, Mr. Slack would invite certain kids down to the gym during recess and you would play floor hockey with him, and that was just like the most awesome thing. But he didn't just choose people at random and he didn't go on a rotation. He picked certain kids, and it was an indication that Mr. Slack thought that you were a good athlete. And I can remember the day I'm sitting there in lunch and I get tapped on the shoulder and Mr. Slack says, it's raining, come down to the gym during recess. And I'm like, oh, wow. And athletically speaking, I think it was the first time somebody believed in me. And then through the years, you know, I played different sports, and you may or may not have noticed, you know, I still sports, you know, occasionally I talk about it, go Cowboys, and it kind of leaks out here or there. I don't know if you've ever heard that, but it's been a big part of my life, and, you know, I think you could trace the beginning of that back to that moment. Now, out of elementary school, 30 years later, I'm at the DMV. You know, bring a lunch, maybe a sleeping bag, because nothing happens fast at the DMV. And I'm sitting there for a long time. And the way they did it is they would call names 10 at a time, and you would line up. And as soon as a window came clear, you would, you know, go to that window that was open. So in the group in which they called my name, I was like the second name called, and they call the other names. And then at the end of the line, I hear Don Slack. And I thought, that was his name. No way. Is my elementary gym teacher here now? And I turn around, and sure enough, the dark hair is now salt and pepper, but it's him. And as I'm standing there in line, and he's at the end of the line, I'm thinking, that guy made an impact on my life. And so there was this internal sort of struggle, and I thought, I just gotta do it. And I got out of line, and I went back, and I walked up to him, and he's looking at me like, who in the world are you? And I said, you don't remember me, but I remember you. And I remember the day you tapped me on the shoulder at lunch, and all of a sudden, he got this smile on his face. And we talked about that, and then he told me about how he couldn't do that long after I was gone because the lawyer shut it down because a kid might get hurt, and they tend to ruin everything. But for a while it was happening. It was awesome. And I don't know what that did for him, but I got to tell you, if you gave me a happiness test after being able to say that to somebody who impacted my life, I think it would have been off the charts. Did I feel gratitude? Yep. Sometimes you got to reveal gratitude. What does gratitude do? It sees, it stops, and it says. And having, you know, that as part of the takeaway from this story is great, but I got to tell you, there's a little bit more in the story that I think also relates to who we are in this day as well. Remember Luke's bigger picture? I'm writing to you an orderly account so that you can know the certainty of what you have been taught. Oh, Theophilus, I've investigated these things for myself. What was Luke trying to do? He was really trying to answer a question by telling the true stories of who is Jesus and why did he come? Who is he and why did he come? Why would he include a story about lepers in it? Let me cue this up for you. There was a time when John the Baptist, and if you know anything about him, he was sent by God to prepare the way for Jesus, to declare, the one you've been waiting for, he's coming. And then one day when Jesus walks up, John the Baptist goes, there he is. That's him. And a little bit later, John gets arrested and he's put in prison and he's facing the end of his life and he winds up being beheaded. But before that happens, in the darkness of that cell, and I think in the doubt within his own heart, he sends a couple people to Jesus and he asks this question, are you the one or should we expect someone else? You know, did I get it wrong? And Jesus' answer to him seems a little bit curious to us. This is Jesus' answer. Go and tell John what you have seen and heard. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear and the dead are raised up. The poor have good news preached to them. And we go, Jesus, why didn't you just say, yes, I'm the one? Why do you have to put in, you know, all these details and all these, you know, weird sort of pictures there? You know why he says this? Because 600 years before Jesus was born, God, through the prophet Isaiah, said, you want some resume material for the one who has been promised? You want to know who it's going to be so that you don't have to take other people's word for it and just kind of believe that you believe that you believe? When you see certain things happening that are different, not just average, ordinary things that anybody could do, those are signs that this is the one. The one you've been waiting for. Isaiah 35, then the eyes of the blind shall be opened and the ears of the deaf unstopped, and shall the lame man leap like a deer and the tongue of the mute sing for joy. One healed person in this story saw past the gift and saw the giver. It's somebody who realized, wow, God has just dropped a gift into my life, and man, am I grateful. I'm going to take off just like everybody else, and all of a sudden, wait a minute. What just happened to me is part of that list of signs that was given about the one that we've been waiting for this whole time. And so, yeah, it's important that I go down there and I do what he asked me to do. But right now, there's even a bigger story playing out than what just happened in my life. Because he must be the one who's come for the world. And the one who was promised that he could take away the sins of the world by offering his life in our place. And so one man stops in his tracks, connects the dots of what had been predicted for so long, falls down at Jesus' feet. What does it say that he does? He's praising God. He's worshiping Jesus. It's as if he gets it. You just blessed me beyond what anybody deserves. But there's even something bigger here. A bigger story and a bigger reality. Jesus is the one. So here's what I'm going to invite us to do on the other side of that, is to be the one. Be the one. 10 were healed. 1 turned around. 1 acted on it. 1 spoke words based on it. So be the one who feels gratitude and reveals gratitude. Well, you may ask, how in the world do we do that? Let me give you a couple ways to do it. This week, say thank you to 3 people who have impacted your life. And maybe it's somebody from the past. Maybe it's somebody who's going to be sitting around your Thanksgiving table. Maybe it's somebody else who's a part of your life right now. I don't know who it is for you. But say thank you. And if you think, well, you know what? If they're sitting here close to me right now, and then I say it this coming week, they're going to think, well, you only did that because they talked about that on Sunday. So I'm going to wait a couple weeks till they think it was my own idea. If this doesn't come naturally, they already know it's not your idea. Okay, so let's just do it. Let's just do it. It's okay. Here's the other way. Maybe that we can do it. Serve as a part of Love Gives. And many of you have already jumped in. And doesn't it just make sense that if there's a God who has blessed us and a God who is legit, the one who has come to make people's hearts right, and it just makes sense to turn around and show compassion because that's what we've received. And I don't know about you, I've never had leprosy, but I do know this heart of mine, it's pretty sick. And so if we're in a relationship with him, that's God's doing. Doesn't it just make sense that when those strings attached, we would show compassion? Be the one who feels gratitude and reveals gratitude. Would you bow your heads together with me? God, it's appropriate for us to say thank you to you, and yet in so many ways it feels like it falls so far short of all that you have done and all that we have received. And let that be part of it, though, that we say thank you. But God, may you challenge us, motivate us to act on it, to speak words of it. And God, I pray that we would recognize how good, how generous you have been to us. And if we belong to you today, God, you've healed these hearts of ours of something even more profoundly difficult than leprosy. And healed it of the sin that separates us from a holy God. But with your forgiveness, with your coming into this world, with you laying down your life, with you taking it up again, we can be made right with you, and it's your doing. And so God, walk us through this season of Love Gives with hearts that are just overflowing with gratitude and emotion, actions, and words that all point to you. And we ask and pray you would lead us in that direction for your name's sake. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen.